You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
This song puts me in such a good mood. It's not one of those with like secret depressing meaning, is it? I don't know, it's about floating on. I mean, it sounds like maybe they're on drugs or something. I don't know. It's just, you know, I didn't know if it was somebody dying. Well, it's actually about my mother dying and she's floating on.
I just like the tune at the start. I'm not going to pay attention to the lyrics.
That song reminds me of high school and, you know, skipping lunch to go pick up lunch. And my friends would always have that damn CD playing, the Modest Mouse CD, and that song was always playing. And I grew to love the song, and I have very fond memories of it. But I've just been seeing, like, the TikTok trends of, like, guys listening to songs from, like, the 90s and, like, oh, this is such a great song, and listen to it, and, you know, it's like, mom's got cancer, and I'm addicted to meth and all those things, and, you know. Semi-charm kind of life, you know, that one's like, oh, that's so great. Yeah. It's like, actually, no, it's not.
That's the only Modest Mouse song I can think of, though. It was kind of a one and done for them, right? I mean,
I don't know if I'd call it one and done. I think they probably got bigger hits, but that's the only one that comes to my mind, too, like just off the top of my head. But
yeah,
I would imagine they got other ones because I feel like they were around for a while.
Yeah, I was looking up their songs. I just didn't.
On Spotify, that has, you know, 394 million plays, and there's a couple other with, like, yours. I guess the next one has 100 million on their next biggest, so it's a pretty solid number.
I only recognize, like, a couple in their top five, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest Modest Mouse expert, but.
Yeah, no, me neither. That song, though, just puts me in a good mood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know if, again, Float On was about somebody dying and floating on or whatever, but good mood, chipper. Love to hear it. Love to see it. That's what I'm going to say tomorrow when Tennessee takes the basketball court for the last time inside the Thompson Bowling Arena at Food City Center. Senior day, Kentucky, gigantic game, gigantic stakes. Just if you believe that Tennessee needs to win this game for the one seed, which I do. I don't think they have that wrapped up by any means. Maybe they officially wrap it up by beating Kentucky, ending the season with a fourth straight quadrant one victory. Maybe that would do the trick, but I think you definitely got to win it to keep your hold of the one seed because momentum has shifted to people saying that you are the fourth one seed. Now's not the time to give anybody any reason to start doubting you.
What I found interesting was if they win against Kentucky tomorrow, that'll be their seventh straight win against ranked opponents this season. That'd be a program record. They haven't lost to a ranked team since the North Carolina game, late November.
So they went 0-3 to start the year against ranked teams. So this will be their seventh straight ranked game, which to me the headline there is not the seventh straight win, which that's impressive. It's the fact that they've played 10 ranked games in a season. That seems really, really high.
Yeah. Yeah, it started, the Illinois game was the first, and then Ole Miss, who has no business being ranked now that we look at them, but they were ranked then. And
I think
then,
we kind of knew it at the time, too.
Yeah, then Kentucky, Auburn, Alabama, South Carolina, and so, yeah, we're closing in on some program history if they can close that one out tomorrow. Just another little interesting wrinkle to a season that's really been great. Had a few bumps in the road, but not many. So far,
seven straight ranked wins. You know, to me, like Tennessee, I keep saying their strength of record, I think at number four in the country, somewhere teetering around like your 4, 5, 3, somewhere around there, depending on how it fluctuates. But a top five record, a top five ranking, a good strength of schedule. I don't understand the doubt in the team overall, and I can't understand. When you put the side-by-side up, I think it's CBS Sports that allows you to do the side-by-side rankings of the resumes. To me, like, Tennessee blows Arizona out of the water. To me, there's no question about who should be the one seed. And that's – I think I would think that even if I wasn't in Knoxville. Like, see, that's what I think – that's what I think the thing about this basketball team is this team is likable. I think this team is liked outside of Knoxville. I think a lot of people are going to be on the Tennessee bandwagon – when March Madness rolls around.
I think they're well, from an analyst standpoint, a lot of them are already getting on. You know, it's
Wally Szczerbiak called Tennessee the best team in college basketball and said Dalton Knecht was the national player of the year. And they're like, what? You think he's better than Zach Eadie? He's like, yeah, he's more skilled. They're like, what? You think they're better than UConn? He's like, right now they'd beat UConn. Gary Parrish's like, no. Come at him, UConn fans. But you're right. There's been a lot of steam, Bob, for analysts riding both Dalton Knecht and this Tennessee basketball team.
Yeah, the other one, a lesser name, but we've talked about, I watch Field of 68. They do a nightly podcast, video podcast, and they have one of their guys. They have a handful of guys on there, but one is Terrence Oglesby, who used to play at Clemson.
Bradley County boy. From Cleveland, yeah.
Yeah, so
he played in our district in high school. Man, he was a baller. He'd come into your high school and drop about 30 points hitting threes. Yeah, he was Steph Curry locally, like, you know, before, of course, Steph Curry busted on the scene. But it's always interesting to see him talking. And
yeah, and he was all in on Tennessee. He didn't talk so much about Connect as much as he talked about the team and said, they're my pick to win the national title, which feels good. But then it's like, man, is it all happening too quick? It's like, can we slow down the expectations? I don't know. I go back and forth because, we all have that ambition, and we're all very excited about this team. And I love, by and large, I think I'm happy that media is coming around and embracing them. And like you said, John, I think they could be kind of a sneaky favorite for a lot of people too, you know, as far as someone to follow, but just hope we convert, because that would suck. Let's at least get to that Sweet 16 and then see what happens.
Wow, Bob's telling you guys pump the brakes. Let's just get to the Sweet 16 and reevaluate.
Well, not pump the brakes, just, you know, nobody wants them to get deep as into the tournament as far as they can, as I do, but I don't know. Sometimes this happens, you know, a lot of times it happens at the beginning of the season. You know, think about last year, North Carolina preseason number one in basketball. They don't even make the tournament. You know, I'm just thinking in those terms. These guys seem built that I don't think they listen to this stuff, and B, I think they're strong enough that, you know, they're pretty focused.
Yeah, this isn't preseason high. This team has 30 games of proving it. Now, with Oglesby, I got to point out that I've only seen him have one other take, really, in his media career. And that was earlier this year when he said, like, Penny Hardaway was the national coach of the year and the best coach in America. And then Memphis immediately fell apart after that. Like, he got rolled up in the hype. So now I'm wondering, is he just a prisoner of the moment? Does he, like, hey, I went to high school in Tennessee, so all my takes are going to be centered around Tennessee that go viral? I don't know, because Memphis, Penny Hardaway was his guy, you know, a month ago, and now – he said, you know, we're going to be singing Rocky Top in Glendale in April. So at the time, maybe you could defend the Penny Hardaway take. Right now, you could defend the Tennessee take. One aged very poorly. Let's hope that the second one does not.
Not going to lie, I thought about that when once you said he was a Bradley County boy. I was like, oh, this might have a little more, you know, it's got some local allegiance too.
I don't know how much he claims it, though. Like, I haven't listened to his content. Like, you know, he went to Clemson. It wasn't like he was a local kid that stayed local. I don't know where he lives. I don't know where he's, you know, based out of. I don't know if anyone's thinking, oh, he's a Tennessee guy making this statement. It's just
– yeah.
But like, when Tennessee – goes into an arena, or Tennessee, you know, leaves a trail of blood as they have decapitated their opponents. The worst things that fan bases have been able to say this year are that the team is old. Like, oh yeah, you got Santi and Josiah. Those guys have been there forever. You got a bunch of 24-year-olds. Okay, sure. You know, they did the same thing with Hendon Hooker. They've been able to say that, and that, you know, a strangely popular one from all the fan bases as they cope is, well, if you didn't have Dalton Knecht, this would have gone differently.
I know. That drives me nuts.
I happen to just find it funny because it's a good statement. Like, there's nothing you can say back to it, really. Just like, okay, I guess. I mean, never mind the fact this team without Dalton Knecht and without Zakai Ziegler went to the Sweet 16 last year. Like, never mind that fact. Never mind the fact that Tennessee was picked to win the SEC before we even knew Dalton Connect was any good. Like, you know, the media had him ranked as like the 30th best transfer, give or take. And Tennessee was still picked to win the SEC. Both of those things, you know, happened before we knew Dalton Connect was an All-American. But also, like, you could say that about any team, any basketball team for sure, but any team in general. Do you think that 49ers fans came out of the Super Bowl saying, oh, man, if the Chiefs didn't have Patrick Mahomes, we would have gotten them?
Yeah.
Do you think the Utah Jazz fans still sit there? Man, we would have beaten the Bulls if Michael Jordan wasn't on that damn team.
Good thing you had Jordan.
Yeah. It's a good thing you had Jordan. If we had Jordan, we would have won. I think back to DeMar DeRozan saying that after the Cavs swept the Raptors that year, and they're just like, well, yeah, if we had LeBron, we would have swept them. It's like, you can't argue with it. You are right, person on the internet. If you did take the best basketball player off of his basketball team, that team's probably not going to be quite as good. Now, it's funny coming from South Carolina fans. You know, a program that's been pretty irrelevant for a long time. Especially like a program that's gotten their ass kicked by Tennessee, you know, a lot of times without Dalton Connect even on the court. But I have appreciated that. That's the, you know, Kentucky said it, Alabama said it, South Carolina said it. Well, if you take Dalton, Auburn said it, if you take Dalton Connect's points away, we would have blown them out. If they didn't have Dalton, we would have won. Yeah, that's a good point.
And we had at least one game, Alabama, where really, I mean, he was off a little, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, Connect hasn't had to do all the scoring. He hasn't had to have the Auburn last 12 minutes production for Tennessee to win this year. Like, you can make the argument that Tennessee's better when he scores less just because that means everyone else is scoring, and Dalton hasn't had to go into hero mode. But it's nice to know that he can go into hero mode. It's nice that he can go inside the phone booth and come out and it's like, okay, here's Kobe Bryant. Here's Kevin Durant. Here's Michael Jordan. Here comes a score that's going to pick you up and get you to the finish line. It's nice to be able to do both. Again, Sam, that was a Superman reference. But, you know, against Alabama, no, he didn't have to carry the load. Now, we'll say, like, having him on the court is still a big benefit, right? And one thing that Dalton has really unlocked, and maybe it's from the South Carolina game, because that's when reportedly he had to basically sit down with the boys and be like, look, I like scoring, but I need you guys to do some of that too. He's like, I like doing it, but look, let's all kind of play this offense together. That was the report coming out of UT, was that the players had a meeting after that game leading into the Kentucky game where Connect and the other leaders kind of sat down and had that conversation. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Kentucky game, you know, going into Rupp Arena and scoring 100 points, Connect didn't do much in that game. You know, he had his, I assume, somewhere around 15 to 18 points. I think it was 14 maybe.
16.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So right there in the middle, and I think that was with the benefit of getting at least like four free throws at the end when it was over. But he didn't do much that game by his standards. And, you know, Zakai and Josiah combined for, what, 52? I think they both had 26 in that game.
Yeah, they both had 26.
Yeah.
Five of Dalton's 16 were free throws.
Yeah, and I want to say he got four of them in the last, like, minute and a half whenever they were fouling down 10 for some reason trying to make some type of comeback. But they are right. Tennessee would not be as good without Dalton Connect. But if you take Dalton Connect away and just replace him with a solid SEC player, this team's still probably top three in the SEC. Maybe wins it. I don't know. Like, I don't want to downplay Dalton's impact because he has made this team the best in the SEC, and it's made them one of the best in the country, and a team that is going to be a very popular pick to cut down the nets, to win it all. Like, Tennessee's going to get picked in a lot of brackets. Dalton Connect is a big reason why. I don't want to downplay him, but I think this team still would have been a 24-25 win team without him. They would have found another way. It wouldn't have been as visually appealing. We might have had to slow it down and keep doing the whole defense grind you out thing. So I think the heavens that Dalton Connect is here. But, like, you know, Rick Barnes won a lot of games at Tennessee without him. But at the same time, this is the best team he's had at Tennessee, and it's because of him. Both can be true. The team's likable. I see that. You know, there were some – I saw South Carolina fans like, look, now's not the time to say it, but I really like this Tennessee team. I really like Dalton Connect. because you come out, you know, impressed with the way they play, and you can't help but watch basketball and be impressed with Dalton Connect.
There was somebody, I don't know if it was an Alabama fan or an Alabama media person, who was getting into Andrew Perloff, thanks to his hot take, and he even said, I paraphrasing here, but he was just like, I don't even know how you can say this about the kid. You know, winning a conference championship's hard. He's earned it. He's a great player. And that I'm sure they have other ambition. He goes, and it pains me to say it about that team, but they deserve it. You know, I mean, he was, you know, it was kind of a backhanded compliment, but it was at least grounded, you know, logical.
Oh, no. And if you don't want Tennessee to win because you think Tennessee fans are jerks, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
There will be plenty of people that have encountered Tennessee fans that are not going to wish for anything good for Tennessee fans. But even them, even they kind of have to say this team's still fun to watch. Because you can't watch basketball and not like watching this team. Like, they might annoy you when they're playing your team. You might find Zakai Ziegler really annoying when he's D-ing up your guard. And he's doing the whole, you know, under your jersey thing the entire game and guarding you basically full court for 35 minutes of the game. That might be annoying when you're playing them, but when you're watching objectively, you're like, oh, yeah, that guy plays with fire. I like him. When you see Dalton Connect raining jumpers and taking over games and doing it at all three levels, it might suck if you're rooting for Janai Broome and Auburn, but if you're not, you got to stop and say, man, we haven't had a college score like this in a long time. And that's a good compliment for this team, is that they kind of beat the hate out of you. Or at least they earn your respect after they beat the hate out of you. Maybe even still hate them. But you usually respect them after they leave. And the entire country tomorrow probably should be rooting for Tennessee because, you know, it's Kentucky. So it kind of helps, too, is that I wonder how, like, fans across the country feel about SEC basketball. Like, I'm assuming they all kind of hate Kentucky just because they get a little bit of the Duke treatment. But, like, do they find Nate Oates as annoying as everyone else in the SEC does?
I have friends up north who know basketball, and they definitely follow it, and they don't like Nate Oates, for example. But that's probably a smaller faction. It's not like I think you're right. I think it's probably received a little differently around the country.
I just think, like, when you look at, like, the other top teams in the SEC, especially this season, but this is usually the Big Four in any given season lately, but, like, Bruce Pearl, probably not got a lot of fans across the country. People probably find him to be pretty annoying and kind of a cheater. Now, I'm not going to say that everyone hates him because he used to be a big star and, you know, people used to really like him, but I just wonder if his act has worn a little thin. Maybe, maybe not. But, like, Calipari, Alabama, can't imagine too many neutral people look at those teams as like, I'm rooting for them. Maybe Alabama basketball gets a little bit of the Alabama football treatment of just like, the school's had enough winning, it's fine. Maybe I'm biased, but our friend of the program, Rick Barnes, seems to be the most likable of those four coaches. His program, pretty clean. I don't know. We'll talk Tennessee, Kentucky after the break as we get set. Huge game. Tennessee wants to keep their winning streak going, wants to keep their winning streak against ranked opponents going, wants to keep the winning streak, which, you know, isn't very long, but it is a winning streak against Kentucky. Want to keep it going as well. We'll talk about it. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Hour number two, kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Hour number two is brought to you by the 37 Club. We have launched the 37 Club on fanrunradio.com as a way to connect with you, the audience, have a more tight-knit community, give you more content. We're going to work really hard this year on giving more content outside of just the radio shows. The 37 Club gives us a place to do that and gives you a chance to kind of support us if you're from out of town and can't support our sponsors, or even if you support our sponsors but want to support us a little bit more and get access to private things like our private Discord, exclusive events. You know, you can sign up, get your team signed up for our charity golf tournament through the 37 Club. We're kind of holding those spots for our biggest supporters. Got big plans this fall, tailgates on campus you get access to. where we're going to take care of you. Doing a baseball ticket giveaway for some weekend series games this weekend for Illinois. So if you're maybe wanting some tickets to the Friday or Sunday game, I believe we might even have two Saturday tickets. I need to double check that. Go sign up. I'm going to start giving away tickets, I think, at 11 a.m. So, yeah, just look into it. FanRunRadio.com. Up there at the top, it says 37 Club. You can read more about it. And like I said, we're really going to start ramping up some content there and try to give you guys more and kind of create some new things and new avenues. The 37 Club on FanRunRadio.com. All right, Sam, what did we miss yesterday?
Thanks, John. Some big news in terms of some NFL contracts. The Chicago Bears re-signed their star cornerback Jalen Johnson to a four-year, $76 million deal. $54 million of that guaranteed. This is a big one, though, for Chicago, a guy who they franchise-tagged kind of earlier this week. Some drama that was surrounding him a little bit earlier in the season. He requested a trade when some contract extension talks kind of halted in the middle of the season. But season ends, they get those cleared up. The Bears keep their number one corner in the building, and they continue to invest on that defense. They've given big contracts now to Tremaine Edmonds last year, big linebacker, $72 million deal, and then traded for Montez Sweat at the deadline this year, gave him a $98 million deal.
So the Bears are keeping their veterans. I guess with Caleb Williams, you can view him as somebody that should be able to play in year one, right?
Yeah.
Like, if he's as good as everyone's saying he is, and if he's as good enough to be the runaway number one pick, like, he should be able to get that team to the playoffs next year, right? Like, that should be their goal.
With the money that they've got in their pocket, too, you'd think. That's probably their hope.
I mean, I thought they were pretty good at the end of last year.
Yeah, they played a lot better at the end of the
year. Like, once
sure.
they traded for Sweat, that defense became pretty good. Like, have another draft and – I assume probably get some extra picks from the Justin Fields trade. Like,
still got two first rounders.
Yeah, they should be a playoff team. That should be their goal next year. Caleb Williams maybe doesn't have to be as good as CJ Stroud was, but he has to win some games. He has to go at least like 9-8 next year.
You think that's the blueprint for him, like CJ Stroud type?
I mean, CJ Stroud was awesome.
Absolutely.
Obviously. But like also going into the next season, DJ Moore is a better receiver than anybody the Texans had on their roster at the time. Now, you know, some of those guys ended up being really good. Nico Collins is really good, and the rookie
Tank Dell
was a beast and all that. But like going into the year, like DJ Moore's still like a top 15, top 20 receiver. You know, maybe even higher than that. But like that's better. That's a better weapon.
Yeah.
I think Eberflus, if it's not that type of season, he's probably done, right?
I would say so.
Oh yeah.
I'm surprised they actually kind of kept him, but they did show enough signs at the end of last year. You could say, okay, maybe if we can just upgrade this quarterback position and have a full season of having a good defense, give us one more offseason, we can get this right. And it's easier to do that with Eberflus versus having a coach come in and bring in a complete new system and staff and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. A couple more NFL contracts. The Chiefs re-signed their linebacker, Drew Tranquil, three-year, $19 million deal. It's a guy that joined them last season after – spending 4 years with the Chargers, big energy guy on their defense, though. Started 8 games for him, 4.5 sacks, finished 5th on the team. He's a guy that they were really excited about and a guy that they can continue to keep in the building. Turns 29 in August, so that's another young piece on that Chiefs defense. And then the Miami Dolphins, I thought this was a pretty interesting one. Signed former Titan and Atlanta Falcon tight end Jonnu Smith to a two-year, $10 million deal. That's a guy who's a big athlete. I think that will have a pretty big future, I think, in that Dolphins offense.
What do we think of the Dolphins when we're projecting? Like, because we said the Bears, their goal next year, like their focus the entire offseason should be like, hey, get Caleb Williams in here. Honestly, like, I don't even think they should have to worry about maximizing the return on Justin Fields. I think if you're the Bears, just get rid of Justin Fields. Like, don't cut him, obviously. Like, get at least a second-round pick out of him. But, like, whatever idea you had of multiple picks, that might not happen because they know that you don't have any leverage. But, like, don't make that be the story of the offseason. Like, you got another couple weeks to figure it out, but then you should go, you know, full-fledged, have it all settled, lead into Caleb Williams, have that season. With the Dolphins, where are we at there? Because they're a weird team that's not dissimilar from the Bills in terms of like that championship window and money getting ready to come due, but maybe they still have enough more, like one more year in them maybe. And I would say Tua maybe has one more year in him where we think that he can maybe be the franchise quarterback. What's their goal next year? Just try to win the division? Are they looking at Super Bowls? Like what are they doing in Miami?
They might have a chance to win that division, if you think about it. Buffalo's in a little bit of turmoil. I mean, not – and I don't want to sound too dramatic.
A flipped
there.
Roster, at least.
Yeah, definitely a flipped roster. So, I don't know. It will be interesting because we've talked about how much we think how cool Mike McDaniel is and everything else. But I wonder if there's been a conversation like, hey, man, this season you got to do something. And it's not just playoffs. It's like, you know, winning the division would be good. Winning a game in the playoffs or two, like a deep run in the playoffs. I think the expectations will be high. I was kind of surprised the other day. There was I saw some sort of poll from a writer on X, and it was, would you rather have Tua or, and it was this group of quarterbacks that included like Russell Wilson and, you know, it was, you know, Justin Fields. And if I'm a Dolphins fan, I would be like, I don't think I'm done with Tua as far as believing in him. But same deal. I think he's at a crossroads where you think about how he started out last season. The first half of the season, he was like probably one of the top five quarterbacks in terms of productivity.
Yeah.
But then it failed pretty fast towards the end. So it's going to be an interesting season. They were such an entertaining team for me to watch, but they looked very different towards the end of the year.
You also have Aaron Rodgers coming back on that Jets team.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of Aaron Rodgers coming back at age like 39 or 40 after a torn Achilles, especially. I mean, like maybe they can have the offseason and fix the offensive line, but
yeah,
I don't buy them as a threat. If you're the Dolphins and you lose that Jets team, then you got to get rid of Tua. And maybe Mike McDaniel isn't as good as we thought he was.
Sure, yeah, sure. Switching to college football here, some news in terms of some new broadcasting partners. Fox Sports is going to be broadcasting a college football game every Friday on their network now, beginning this season. These games are going to come from the Big Ten, Big 12, and Mountain West. This whole schedule kind of – it hasn't really been determined yet. They said it won't take place until May as those – schedules kind of take some time to get, you know, to kind of everything get planned out, I guess. But this is a big one for Fox. Obviously, their Friday night, they didn't renew the rights with WWE's Friday Night SmackDown, so I think this is kind of what they're trying to put into that spot instead. Obviously, they've got their Big Noon kickoff show that's been, you know, I think it's been growing in popularity in recent years for sure, but they're getting into Friday Night Football here.
Yeah, SmackDown does pretty good for them, like on Friday nights compared to like other Friday night programming. Does 2 million viewers, so I mean it still does pretty solid numbers there compared to, you know, some of the dramas and other things they could show. But obviously, football is going to be expected to do bigger numbers. There's going to be a bigger investment there, and they probably want that to be closer to what, Bob, like 6 million, 7 million viewers at least on Friday nights.
Perhaps. I think it depends on, you know, what caliber games they get. I know it's Big Ten, Big 12, and Mountain West, but mm-hmm. you know, if it's, you know, if it's Minnesota Northwestern,
right.
They're not going to get those kind of numbers that even matched SmackDown. But
yeah,
you got to believe though that they're going to plug in a few high profile games to get that thing going.
Yeah, maybe 6 million's too big of a number because I mean that's a good Saturday number for some of these games, right? 6 million is like the highest ones get like what 10-11 on Saturdays.
Yeah, like
at most.
Yeah, maybe the marquee afternoon game.
Yeah, okay,
or the prime
time
game.
The Friday night, yeah, maybe they just want the 2 or 2.5 million. There's also talk that SmackDown like and WWE was kind of wanting to put that on USA. Because they have that relationship there with USA, and since Raw's going to Netflix, that has that opening to allow them to kind of put SmackDown there. So I don't know if it was a mutual decision or if Fox just didn't want to pay or what. It was always kind of weird that it's on there on cable TV. I mean, it's good exposure, but kind of weird on a Friday night to turn on Fox and see it there.
Yeah. Lastly here, strange coaching hire. Ole Miss has hired former Mississippi State head coach Zach Arnett to be a defensive analyst on their team. Switching rivalries here, going from Mississippi State down to Oxford. Zach Arnett, a guy that obviously was hired after Mike Leach's passing. A defensive guy, definitely just a complete switch in philosophy based on what Mike Leach was running with them. But a guy that is pretty respected, I think, as a defensive mind. San Diego State for 8 years and then went to Mississippi State to be their defensive coordinator and linebacker coach before he was elevated as their interim head coach. But he's going down to Oxford to be a defensive analyst on Lane Kiffin's staff.
Is this a troll from Lane Kiffin?
I guess. It sure seems like it. It sure seems like it.
Because when I saw this, I'm like, okay, it seems like a troll. And then I was like, is Lane still wanting to troll Mississippi State? Because if you're Ole Miss, you're winning the rivalry right now. Like, one team's top 10, one team has got aspirations to make the playoff. Their schedule sets up for 10-2, maybe 11-1. Like, they're going to be a big pick to be one of the 12 teams in the playoff. The other team, I think their over-under is like 4.5.
5.5, yeah.
5.5, okay. Mm-hmm. 5.5. They're just trying to make a bowl game. But it's a rivalry, so, you know, it's a good time to kick your opponent when they're down to kind of let them know, like, how beneath them they are. Zach Arnett, I mean, he's on the Butch Jones model of like, hey, I got fired, I got a buyout, I'm not going to get another type of job that's going to ruin my buyout, so I'll go work essentially for free and be an analyst down there. Then maybe, like, you know, if it opens up, I can be a D coordinator on Kiffin's staff, and maybe that's my path. But jumping ship like that in the rivalry, disgusting.
Used to stand for something.
Disgusting. Anything else we need to hit?
That's about it. Russell Wilson, mutual interest with the Steelers, but that's just a gray area report, I think.
Where did that come from, though?
I don't know. Yeah. No credible source, I don't think.
Yeah. Do you see
two gross entities at this point? Like, I got my thoughts on the Steelers quarterback position. I got my thoughts on Russell Wilson. They're both just gross.
Yeah.
That seems like a good match. Let's do that.
Sure.
Let's ride.
Yeah.
Do you happen to see Steph's injury last night?
I did not.
No.
Just anybody who's played basketball has been there. It was just a nasty ankle roll underneath the basket. Mm. He'll probably miss a few games at least, but it was not good, man. It looked horrible.
Honestly. He's always had a problem with the ankles.
Yep. Yep.
To the point where the Warriors started a dynasty because of that. Like, the fact they were able to have him, I think it was like a 4-year, like $45 million deal whenever he was, like, you know, coming off of his rookie deal, which allowed them to kind of be – have cap space and have money to spend, and, you know, it's the best bargain to leave, because there was legitimate concerns that, like, that was going to ruin his career early on. He could not keep that ankle healthy. Bob, you're a married man. I won't ask you. Two nights ago, Sam, did you see that woman in the Warriors crowd?
Yeah.
I guess they've recently found out she is an escort, and she has, I guess, been kicked off of Instagram because of it, I think.
Kicked, like, off of Instagram?
I think I saw that she got kicked off of something. I think it was Instagram. I don't know if you're allowed to sell your escorting services on Instagram. I don't know if that violates the rules.
It probably seems illegal, yeah.
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 But people had, like, tracked her down and then, like, found out, oh, here's what she's doing. I think she got in trouble for that.
Well, let's hope that dad looking wasn't in.
Yeah, I don't know how you explain that one. You're caught in 4K,
yeah,
you know, forever in a viral photo of this big-chested woman. Quite a week for them going back to last Saturday. Big-chested woman bouncing around while Steph Curry is celebrating a shot, and the dad or somebody's turning around just staring, and that shirt was barely hanging on for its life.
I heard that the NBA, like, posted a picture of that celebration or something like that, and they, like, intentionally cut her out of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Bad idea from the NBA.
Right?
You want to get kids to watch the games instead of just watching, you know, clips on Instagram and TikTok? You got to have that woman in there. That would have created a whole new generation of basketball fans.
Thought we were growing the game.
I didn't see that till this morning, honestly. I wasn't even aware of it till this morning. So
when you saw it, you just said, disgusting. What happened to the game I used to love, to America? Disgusting.
Yeah. Got no time for that.
Sam, you said you got some college football topics we could talk about?
Yeah, a little coaches' rankings.
All right, well, I like coaches' rankings. We'll talk some college football. We'll switch gears. There's been a lot of basketball this week. We got more basketball coming up in the third hour. Rick Barnes at the top of the hour. We'll talk some football coming up next. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. All right, Sam, you said you want to talk some college football. Let's hear what you got. This is your segment.
Better be good.
It better be good. You're in charge.
All right, we got Bruce Feldman on The Athletic yesterday came out with ranking his top 25 college football coaches. Interesting little list here. What do you want to guess here, John? Top five?
So who's doing this, Bruce Feldman?
Bruce Feldman.
Smart guy. Maybe my favorite when it comes to college football. Bruce doesn't have the same condescending tone as everyone else when it comes to covering the sport. I've never really seen him try to really just put his opinion of like politics in anything either. Like he seems like he stays out of that and seems like he knows what the hell he's talking about. He just wants to do his freaks list, which I can appreciate. I got a list of freaks I like to write about too. I like when he does that every year. He's a friend of my podcast. He came on there one time. He gave me credit for breaking a story after he tried to steal it from me. Nice. Me and Bruce were cool.
Okay.
My favorite college football personality. Outside Trey Wallace, in case he's listening. Just kidding, Bruce. I like you better, in case you're listening. All right, his top five coaches. Number one's got to be Kirby Smart at this point, correct?
Correct. Kirby Smart at one.
Is he doing a ranking system? Like where he's doing like recruiting 10? Like, is he doing like a point value and doing like a cumulative thing, or is he just saying, here's who I think's the best?
I think it's just who's the best, yeah.
Okay, because sometimes
the only thing that he's got in here is last year's ranking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Kirby Smart came in at two last year, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Nick Saban. Nick Saban was number one last year. He's gone.
He also said that he won't include coaches who haven't spent at least three seasons as a head coach, which means Dan Lanning would not be in there, among some others, but Dan Lanning's probably the headliner.
Wait. Who's not in there?
Dan Lanning.
You have to spend at least three seasons at a school. I'm sorry.
Three seasons at a school.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a head coach.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
Three seasons as a head coach.
So not just 3 years as a head coach and you're at a new school.
No. Three seasons as a head coach, period.
Right. But do you have to be at the same school for 3 years? Okay.
No.
Yeah, okay. This is the first we were saying first. It'd be 3 years at a school. But you just mean 3 years as a head coach. Got it. So no Dan Lanning, who I think – you know, I don't know where to rank him, and maybe that's why Bruce Feldman doesn't do it, because he's the best in the game. Bruce knows you can't have an inaccurate ranking. You have to have enough data to judge somebody. But to me, I'd have Dan Lanning somewhere between, I feel like right now, without actually doing the list, 8 to 12?
Yeah.
8 to 15, maybe?
Sure. Yeah.
Another name that would fit in that category is Mike Elko, who rose quickly. And I'm not sure. He might show up in a top 25, but he wouldn't be included in this list either.
No, I think he did enough at Duke, yeah, to be in the top 25.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, for sure. I don't know where I would have him yet. Not as high as Lanning.
Yeah.
But maybe he's better than Lanning. Who knows? Maybe he gets to Texas A&M and he turns into a stud. Because what he did at Duke was maybe just as impressive as what Lanning did at Oregon. Okay, so as I'm sitting here, Sam, and I haven't looked at this list. I'm doing it blind. I really don't know who's number two. Because, like, I feel like there's a handful of names who all have a case for number two, or at least people will consider them number two. I think you got DeBoer, who I don't think is quite ready there to be number two. You got Dabo, Career Achievement Award. You got Ryan Day. Oh, no, you got Harbaugh. Harbaugh's number two.
No, he's not there.
Harbaugh's out of the game.
Oh, Harbaugh left.
He's
yeah,
in the NFL.
Phew.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was just thinking, he's gone. Okay, so no Harbaugh. Ryan Day, surely God Feldman knows he's not the second best coach. I'm going to go with Dabo.
Correct. Dabo at two. I don't know if I like that, but
I
if you think about it.
Yeah. I think that's body of work recognition. Sure. I think it's too high in the current state.
Yeah.
But just when you look at coaches and national championships,
absolutely.
I mean, there's Mack Brown who's still kicking. He's not a top coach. And outside of that, it's just Dabo and Kirby right now, right? That currently have national championships because Les Miles is gone. Jimbo's gone. Harbaugh's gone. Is there anyone else I'm missing? Like, those are the only two active national champions, right?
Yeah.
Besides Mack Brown?
Yeah, you're right. Malzahn just got to the championship game. That was it. He didn't win.
Number three, my pick for number three. This is going to sound stupid. Does Bruce Feldman believe in this guy?
It's an interesting one if you want me to give you a hint.
No, I don't need a hint.
Okay.
Because I think it's Brian Kelly.
Okay. You're close.
Okay.
He's in range. He's got Lance Leopold from Kansas here.
Okay, yeah. You could have given me 10 guesses, and I don't think I would have guessed Lance Leopold.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying Bruce is wrong, but he's going, okay, I'm not necessarily getting blinded by the big schools. Because whenever you see these rankings, you have the Lincoln Rileys, you have the Kirby's, or you have Ryan Day. You have those guys, big schools, big jobs. So this guy's saying, if I could pick any of the coaches in the country, Lance Leopold's my number three.
Yeah. Which I think is fair. I mean, you turn around a Kansas program that was in the dumpster, you know.
Yeah, he calls him a miracle worker.
They had a 56-game losing streak in conference road games that he broke at Kansas. That is crazy.
He's done a great job. Okay, so yeah, go ahead and just round out the top five.
Kalen DeBoer at number four. Ryan Day at five. Brian Kelly comes in at six. You want to guess where Heupel comes in then next year?
I'm going to guess it's not next. But him ranking Lance Leopold makes me think he's going to take games won into account and not so much just championships. Josh has won a bunch of games. He's probably not getting top 10, though, right?
Mm-mm.
14th, 12th, 13th?
17.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Ranked above him, Dave Clawson from Wake Forest. Kirk Ferentz at Iowa.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Kirk
Ferentz, Dave Clawson, Mark Stoops all above him. Jeff Brohm at Louisville. Chris Klieman at Kansas State.
Okay, hold on. Let's just run 1 through 17.
Okay.
And, Bob, you say agree or disagree on them being ranked higher than Josh Heupel. Or debatable. You can either say yes, no, debatable.
So, ended at Brian Kelly at six.
Yeah. So far we agree, right, the top six. Well, sure. Lance Leopold, like, he's a great coach. His career before Kansas deserves praise as well. Are we sure that he is the third best power football coach? Like, there's something to be said to, like, doing it at a big place. Like, could Lance Leopold come to Tennessee and have more success than Josh Heupel through 3 years? Maybe he could. Maybe if you gave him those resources, he'd be the best coach in the country. Or maybe the job would be too much pressure. Like, I think those are both fair points. Like, I don't know which side it's on. Some of those coaches can get there, and they can take their grinder mentality and just give them the platform and watch them go. Some guys get swallowed up. Like, I'm a little bit afraid of what's going to happen with Kalen DeBoer at Alabama along those same lines. Is he a really smart football mind? Seems like it. Seems like he's really smart. Seems like he can win everywhere he goes, kind of like Lance Leopold. But are we sure he can do it in the pressure cooker? Are we sure he can do it in the SEC? Are we sure he can do it at the highest level? I know he got Washington to the playoff. It's one thing to do it in the Pac-12 when, you know, half the country's not watching or half the football country's not watching and paying attention versus doing it week in, week out at a school like Alabama. So I have those same questions about Lance. For now, I'll say whatever. I would have him debatable. I don't think he's a clear-cut third-best coach or clear-cut better than Heupel, but whatever. Keep going.
James Franklin at seven.
Bob?
Too high for me.
I agree. I think James Franklin's one of the most overrated coaches in the country.
That's not the game. The games agree or disagree if he's better than Heupel. You think he's better than Heupel or debatable? Agree, disagree, debatable.
Debatable.
Okay, so he's got, game what, 10 spots higher?
10 spots higher, yeah.
Okay.
I'd go a strong disagree on that. Kyle Whittingham from Utah.
So you're saying you got
Heupel
ahead of James Franklin?
Yeah, I would. I don't think James Franklin's done anything noteworthy at Penn State with how much talent he's had on his teams.
Congrats on third place in the Big Ten every year, mm-hmm. James. I mean, like, we'll see. You know, James Franklin should be one of the biggest benefactors of the 12-team playoff because now he should be able to get into the 12-team playoff. And also, you know, Jim Harbaugh's gone. That means you're expected now to be the second best team in the traditional Big Ten. Now, you know, I think Oregon probably going to slide in ahead of them, but you should be third, you know, behind Oregon and Ohio State. Second in the traditional Big Ten, third in the new Big Ten. Maybe fourth, depending on what USC does, I guess. Maybe.
Kyle Whittingham from Utah at eight.
No problem there.
Yep, no problem with me either.
Agree.
Yeah.
I actually think he should be higher.
Lincoln Riley at nine.
So Lincoln used to be in these top fives. Lincoln used to be on the rise and a hotshot genius. He's fallen a little bit.
Yeah, he was seven last year.
Okay, so yeah, he probably was like four the year before that. I don't know what Lincoln Riley does better than Josh Heupel at this point. Like in the college game. What does Lincoln Riley do better than Josh Heupel at this point?
Yeah, he's just coached a couple Heisman winners, I guess.
Yeah, no, he has. Sure. But like at this point, you know, Josh Heupel, you can't say that Lincoln Riley's like recruiting quarterbacks better than him.
If you gave Josh Heupel Lincoln Riley's rosters, I think he'd do better. Yeah.
At the very least, he'd do the same.
Yeah.
I think. I just wonder if that's, I mean, that's more of a testament to how we feel about Lincoln Riley versus Josh Heupel, I think. I just think those guys are pretty similar. I think Lincoln Riley probably benefits a little bit from being at bigger schools, or at least more schools with more spotlight on them at the time, you know, with the Heisman winners and with the playoff stuff, kind of having a less of a road to hoe taken over for Bob Stoops versus building your own thing. Like now this year, Josh Heupel should be able to have the Lincoln Riley type seasons. Like Nico should be in the Heisman Trophy mix. Nico should be, you know, in the top five draft pick range when he's eligible in 2 years. Tennessee should be in the playoff. Like Tennessee and USC, like Tennessee should be better this year. Really on both sides of the ball. I think Lincoln Riley kind of benefits from being more handsome than Josh Heupel. Josh Heupel's sure. getting a little bit of the Mike Leach thing, which really disappoints me with my boy Bruce, because Bruce was Leach's biggest fan. Anyways, keep going.
Mike Norvell comes in at number 10.
Bob?
Agree.
Norvell had a real big bounce back year last year. Where was he ranked at this in this poll last year?
21.
Okay, so yeah, quite a rise for him.
Yeah, for sure. Number 11, Steve Sarkisian.
Okay.
After being not ranked last year.
Okay, I was going to say he had to have a big rise too.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we sure Steve Sarkisian's got it rolling at Texas? Are we sure this is like something that's going to sustain? Maybe.
I'd agree with it. I'd have him higher than like Franklin or some of these others. Maybe not at Franklin's number, but higher than Franklin.
To me, when I look at Texas, I don't want to sound like I'm a hater, but like, do they not only beat Alabama last year? Who do they beat besides Alabama? That was like extremely noteworthy. That makes us sure that Steve Sarkisian's got this rolling. Like, schedule was fairly easy. They lost to Oklahoma. They blew the game against Washington. They should have won that game against Washington. They blew that one. I know he won at Alabama, and that is a big accomplishment. I'm not taking away from that. Although, like, I kind of think Alabama probably gets them if they play later in the year, because Milroe had gotten a little bit better, and Milroe was a train wreck when they played in week two or week three, whenever it was. I'm just not exactly sold on Sarkisian. I know everyone has them as a huge favorite to make the playoff, and they should make it, you know, just off talent alone, but I'm holding off on saying that Sark is back.
That's fair. Looking through their schedule, it really not much. I mean, maybe their best win was, like, ranked Kansas at the time. But
I mean, come on.
Without Jalen Daniels.
Yeah, too. I mean, come on. Like, you're telling me their second best win is Kansas?
Nah,
or, like, Oklahoma State once you get to the Big 12 championship.
Oklahoma State, Kansas State, who was a good team.
Yeah, Kansas State. I didn't see that.
They won that on a missed extra point, though, didn't they? Or a missed chip shot?
Is
that a three-point win? Am I remembering that correctly?
They won in overtime.
Yeah.
By three?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kansas State missed a chip shot field goal to lose, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they were playing at with Texas. Their backup as well. Texas, not Kansas State.
Texas was playing with their backup?
Yeah, they're playing with Malik Murphy.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I'll give him a little bit of pass for that then. All right, anyways, get back to the list.
Number 12.
I'm just saying, hold off on telling me Sark is great.
5-7 to 8-5 to 12-2 last year.
We'll see. If he can do it again this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, moving to the SEC is going to be a different challenge, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Chris Kleeman of Kansas State at 12.
No problem there.
Jeff Brohm of Louisville at 13.
Bob?
Debatable. I think he's a good coach. I think it's a little high.
I don't really know what you could say for sure. And maybe this is one of those things like Feldman's saying, like, hey, these guys are all kind of interchangeable from 12 to 18, depending on your flavor. But, like, Jeff Brohm went to a conference championship, so he got that accomplished. But I thought that was a team that was kind of smoke and mirrors last year. Credit to them for navigating the schedule, but I saw enough of Jeff Brohm at Purdue to kind of think he's not better than Josh Heupel. Would we agree that Josh Heupel's ceiling is much, much higher at the very least?
Yeah, the ceiling for sure.
I'd say the floor is higher too. I'm sure Brohm had a couple of four-win seasons at Purdue, if I remember correctly.
I think Brohm's pretty ingenious from an offensive standpoint. He just doesn't have access, and he probably never will have access to the talent and weapons that Heupel will. And so I do think Heupel will be able to always do more.
Yeah, and you know, that's part of it, though. Like, I don't know if Brohm is a bad recruiter or if he's just, yeah, been stuck at some schools where he can't necessarily reel in the big fish. But to me, that's a part of it. That also, I also don't know if Jeff Brohm can handle the pressures of being at a big school. Because you got to be able to do both at Tennessee. Like, you can't come in and do the Jeff Brohm, Lance Leopold thing of, yeah, we're going to try really hard with three stars. You can't do that at Tennessee. You got to be able to do both. You got to be able to scheme, and you also got to be able to go out and get five stars. All right, let's keep running out the next couple.
Yeah, rounding out this list before we get to Heupel. Number 14, Mark Stoops of Kentucky.
Oh, my God.
We all know the answer to that one.
Oh, my God. Oh, Bruce. My God.
Yeah, Bruce, what are you doing,
buddy? Bruce, we're like, boo. I'm booing, Bruce. Boo.
He even rose four spots in last year's rankings.
For what reason?
No idea. No idea.
What did he do last year to warrant rising? All right, keep going.
Kirk Ferentz of Iowa at 15.
What?
That's, again, body of work. I'm telling you, that's all that is. That's recognition for the fact that he's been successful for a long time, and successful is debatable because, again, they've won games. Won 10 games three times in the last four seasons, but I just I
don't buy that one. You could probably put together how many times they've scored over 25 points in the same amount of numbers there, yeah.
Correct.
And then, yeah, 16, rounding that one out, Dave Clawson of Wake Forest.
Okay, do each of these coaches come with a write-up, or is it just a ranking?
Oh, yeah, it comes with, like, a little paragraph.
All right, read me what he says about Josh Heupel. Because right now, me and Bruce, we're on thin ice.
Okay, coming in for Josh Heupel, he says, the Vols have been a punchline for a long time before Heupel came in from UCF. On the stretch of his big play offense, Tennessee went 11-2 in 2022, smashing LSU and Baton Rouge and then taking down Alabama the following week. Amazing turnaround job with Hinton and Hooker gone. UT fell back a little last year, going 9-4, but they didn't fall apart. He has proven to be a superb hire. 22 last year to 17. So he really just talked about Hinton and Hooker and completely threw away last year's season.
So he had him at 22 last year coming off of 11-2 season?
Yeah.
So he thought he did better. He thought better about him coming out of last year than he did the year before? I mean, I know some coaches maybe retired, got fired, whatever. Like, you know, you Saban leaves, you move up a spot. Harbaugh leaves, you move up a spot, whatever. But, like, I don't know, Bruce.
And then Stuart Mandel, also from The Athletic, did his rankings. And guess where he's got Heupel on that? Top 25 again, where he has Heupel.
So Stuart Mandel ranks Heupel probably even lower, I guess. Does he have him even lower?
24.
Does he have a write-up about him there?
Yeah. The Vols slipped back a bit from their breakout 11-2 campaign in Heupel's second season, but still finished 9-4 with a top 20 ranking. He's produced four top 25 teams in six seasons as a head coach. For some perspective, he is a modest 14-10 in SEC play during his time in Knoxville.
Yeah, well, we were playing with, like,
yeah, I know,
a homeless squad the first year.
The fact that he's got the one that really bothers me in Mandel's rankings, yeah, he's got Stoops ahead of him. That's another one. He's got Matt Campbell ahead of him, who has
– jeez.
Yeah. He's got Jed Fish ahead of him. And I know Jed Fish had a great season last year, but, again, get a larger sample size. Willie Fritz is ahead of Heupel. Jonathan Smith is ahead of Heupel. Those were the names that were different from Feldman's list.
If you have the reasoning of, like, hey, the team took a step back last year and we're not sure Heupel, you know, he's got to prove it. Did he catch lightning in a bottle in 1 year? Okay. Like, if you're taking that approach, if you're saying, hey, I have questions, how many coaches ahead of Josh Heupel on this list would have fallen for the Joe Milton hype, would have fallen for the Joe Milton mirage twice, I'd be like, okay, I understand that if that's your reasoning, but it seemed like Feldman wrote nice things about him. Maybe we're biased. Maybe we're here in Tennessee. Maybe we're biased. Maybe Heupel is more of a 15-20 guy. I don't know.
The one thing I'll say Mandel did that I applaud is he at the bottom had what he called a requisite note about Kirk Ferentz. I once again disqualified Iowa's coach for negligently bringing back his son as offensive coordinator last season. Maybe he'll be out of jail this time next year. Thought that was good.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think it is fair.
Even the guy below Heupel in Feldman's ranking, he got Matt Rhule right behind Josh Heupel.
I know. I saw that. Thankfully, neither one of them had Eli Drinkwitz in there. That's what I was worried I was going to see.
Do we overrate Josh Heupel as a fan base? I mean, because I'm not beating the drum that he should be much higher. I'm more so beating the drum that some of these guys ahead of him are actually frauds. Like, in no world can you convince me that Josh Heupel is worse than Mark Stoops. You cannot convince me that Mark Stoops is better than Josh Heupel. I'm sorry.
Especially for how long Stoops has been going at it.
And I get that he's at Kentucky, and I understand everything we say about Kentucky. We treat them like a poor school that they're just so scrappy. Good job. Winning 8 games there, man, that's miraculous. I understand that. I get it. At a certain point, are you not supposed to, like, raise the standard? Like, I know they won a national championship in the early 80s, but, like, could you not have said similar things about Clemson before Dabo took over? They're like, hey, great job, Dabo. You got Clemson to being consistently an 8 or 9 win team. Well, yeah, then Dabo took them to the next level and turned them into a power. I'm not asking Stoops, who's been there for a decade, to turn them into national champions. I'm asking, like, have one non-fraudulent, really good 10-win season. I know he had the one, but, like, you go through it and they didn't beat anybody that year. Beat Tennessee when Tennessee's equal or worse than you.
One thing I would say on that is I think, you know, we're fans, so fans are always going to, I think, inflate things a little. Flip side is I would say the media, I believe they can't get over a bit of a perception. You know, Feldman said nice things, but he's still ranked low. I still think we've heard it before. Sometimes the media treat this Tennessee offense and team like it's a gimmick, you know, and maybe there's a little bit of truth to that, but there's still good coaching behind that.
Well, the coach came up with a gimmick.
Yep.
The coach implemented the gimmick. You know, if they're saying that, like, hey, I need to see him be a little bit more versatile. Okay, I'll listen to that. You know, if you said versatile, if you said that he needs to prove it longer, if you said he, you know, took a step back last year and you mentioned Joe Milton, okay, I'll listen to that. But I don't think there's anything you tell me that makes me think that Mark Stoops deserves to be ranked ahead of Josh Heupel.
One other one that I'll say is interesting is
Dave Clawson. What the hell has Wake Forest done?
They do have Feldman has Heupel ahead of Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, we even mentioned Lane. Like, I mean,
he wasn't even ranked last year in that list.
Where's he at now?
20.
So in the 20s?
21.
21, yeah.
And then Stuart Mandel, the flip side is he's got Lane Kiffin at like 11, I believe, which seems high. He's got him at 11, and you know who Mandel has at number 10? And this bothers me, too. I know there's a lot of fans of this guy. He's got Jamie Chadwell as the 10th best coach in college football.
I'll go back to what I've been saying. For some of these coaches, yeah, they might be diamonds in the rough. They might be studs. Until I see you do it at a big school, I'm always going to doubt you, though.
Yeah.
I'm always going to doubt you. Until I see you do it at a big school, I'm not going to be able to rank you as highly in my top college coaches. Because I think some of these other guys at the big schools could be thought of more highly if they were successful. Like, if Ryan Day had the Jamie Chadwell path, would Ryan Day be able to win at Coastal Carolina? Maybe. Would he be able to win at Liberty? Maybe. But, like, we judge Ryan Day, we call him dumb because he can't beat Michigan. Because he loses a playoff game to Georgia. That's why we think Ryan Day's dumb. And I know they have Ryan Day ranked ahead of them, but I'm saying the perception of Ryan Day, for by and large, is negative, right? When I say Ryan Day to you, you kind of think fraud, overrated. It's because we've watched him in high-pressure situations. I think James Franklin kind of benefits from that, too, for some reason. Where we're like, hey, you're at a pretty big school at Penn State. We're not going to really ask you to beat anybody, though. Just do your thing. Win your 9 or 10 games a year. We'll tell everybody how good you are because we remember you when you were at Vanderbilt, man, and you took them to 8 wins. You're forever stamped, James Franklin. You're a great coach. You know how to beat Northwestern and Iowa. Good job, James Franklin. But at the same time, we look at James Franklin as just, But he gets the credits for beating for winning at Vanderbilt, for beating Tennessee a couple times. We haven't seen him in real pressure. If James Franklin coached at Alabama, if he had gotten the Tennessee job, if he'd coached at Ohio State, and we watched all those games and judging them like, hey, you're supposed to win these games, would we think James Franklin is still so good? Because when I watch Penn State always come out of there thinking, man, he's gross. He's still playing the same style of football that he played at Vanderbilt when he didn't have any talent. I'm so tired of watching his 3- and 4-yard passes.
Yes. Got a few listeners writing in that agree with us, saying Heupel should be higher. Period. End of story.
I'm saying certain coaches should be lower. More so, I don't know what number I think Heupel should be ranked at. I'd be interested to see where people have him ranked. Bob, you know, with kind of knowing where the list is, where would you rank Heupel?
I would rank him somewhere. I don't think it's terribly off. I agree with you. I think it's some of the people they have, the coaches in front of him, that maybe get my ire a little bit. I would say Feldman's got him at 17. I would say 12, 13, somewhere in that range. Mandel's got him at 24. I just don't know where the hell that came from. That just doesn't even seem possible. Again, I would say about 12 to 13 would feel a little more accurate to me.
Yeah. See, I was going to say, if you told me anywhere from 12 to 18, I'm fine with it. As long as, like, the names on your list ahead of you that you can make the case for. The problem is I don't know if you can actually make the case for all of those coaches, so maybe I skewed towards more like 12 to 15. Sam, you?
Yeah, I was right there with what Bob was going to say. I would say like 12 to 14, but I got more of a list with the guys ranked above him on the – more of an issue with people ranked above him on this list than where he's at necessarily.
Good segment, Sam. Good job by you. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Welcome back. Hour 3 of the morning show. We've been talking about it for days now, but we'll say it again. How lucky are we to be witnessing some of the greatest days in the history of Tennessee basketball? And now we've got a chance to talk with the architect of the greatness. 800-plus wins, SEC champion, and the best is yet to come. I'm confident of it. Join us in welcoming to the morning show Coach Rick Barnes. Hey, Coach. How you doing, man?
Hey, Bob. How about you, brother?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for coming on for a few minutes. First off,
sure.
Congratulations on the regular season title. And before we talk about the games, you know, from Wednesday night, what lies ahead tomorrow, I wanted to give you the floor to talk about some special players. We know that tomorrow's senior day. We've been talking about it, and we'll be seeing Triple J, Santiago, and Dalton playing their last game in Thompson Bowling Arena at Food City Center. It's bittersweet for us as fans, so I got to believe it must feel even more so for you as we all honor and celebrate two guys who have truly defined this program's posture, its grit, its integrity over the past 5 years, and then another player who is without a doubt one of the greatest talents this program's ever seen, and he achieved all of that in just one season in Knoxville. Now, that's my perspective. It's probably the fans' perspective, but we'd all love to hear from you, Coach, about what these young men have meant to Tennessee basketball and to you personally.
Bob, that I'll tell you, that's a great question. The fact is, I'm going to miss Santi and Josiah in ways that I don't think anyone can ever understand because of the 5 years we've been together. Those guys know me like they know the back of a book, and the fact that there's times in games when they can read me, they know when I'm upset, they know when I'm what I'm thinking, and oftentimes they'll step right in and before I can get it out when I'm maybe getting after certain things and speak up and say it. But you know, I go back when, you know, after Grant's team left here and we were in starting to really the transition from that group, and Lamonte got hurt and had to finish the season in early December, and Josiah was a freshman, and Santi came in, you know, right after Christmas, had one day of practice and was thrust out there. And you go back to those days when, you know, I think there was such a high expectation level for Josiah and Santi, no one probably knew about, but then Santi came out, I think, hit 5 threes in a game. And But it was really a tough time back then, and I remember that spring that we said, hey, you guys are going to have to lead us going forward, and they've done that in a yeoman type way. And they're two so unselfish players. They really are. Their egos are such that they want to win. You can see them every day, the way they go about their work and what they do. And I think it speaks volumes, too. When Dalton came in, Dalton never once said to us about starting. He never said anything about how much he was going to play. He just simply said, I want to play on a winning team. I'd like to be able to have a chance to play in the NCAA tournament. I want to help a team win. And we knew we needed to add shooting, but Santi and Joe knew that more than anybody. They knew that we had bogged down the last couple of years. And, even going back, Zakai had added something to that where, Zakai's offense helped us. But those guys understand. You talk about an architect. They understand how it's supposed to be built, too. And they knew what they were good at. They knew what our team needed. And so they really, last year, embraced Jordan Ganey coming in because they knew that he had led the nation in three-point shooting as a freshman at Upstate and our young players. But I think the humility of those three guys that we're going to lose has been the key to this team. Dalton, you couldn't be embraced more than he has with his teammates because of he didn't come here like, hey, I'm this, I'm that. He just said, I just want to be a part. And people have asked me before, Bob, about Santi and Joe, how have they taken this? They've embraced it more than anyone because, they're all about winning. They're all about this university. And so it's been an unbelievable ride for me. But I will tell you, I told the team yesterday, as we were preparing, we've scrubbed out the South Carolina game, started getting ready for tomorrow's game. And I said, if anyone ever deserved to have two senior days, it's these two guys. And I talked to the team at length about what they meant to not just me, but to the program. And I said, they know more about me in this room than our assistants because they've been with me the longest. And I respect them in such a way because of what they've done to help me personally and just being with them. I've never seen them in a bad mood. I mean, we all get down, but when we're not playing well, and they know that I don't hold back. And I can tell you, of all the players that I've coached, those two probably handle me better when they know that I hate to use the word anger, but when I'm not happy with the way we've executed, when I'm not happy, especially when we go in that film room after a loss and I'm just pointing out the obvious because the film's backing me up. But the way those guys handle guys coming out of that film room is something that people never see. And that's what I mean by how well they know me. And they know pretty much what's going to happen day to day in terms of where we are as a team and how I'm going to react. And they really help their teammates say, you got to understand where we are, where he's going. And the one thing that they know that I'm going to be consistent with them. But I think their consistency has helped me be consistent. But I'm going to miss them in a way that you can't even imagine.
After the past 5 years, you've had a lot of them, and I know you still have a month to make a few more, but is there a memory that stands out with Santi and Triple J over the last 5 years?
Well, I don't know if I could pick one, but obviously when I think of Santi, where he came in at with he literally practiced one day, and first time I've ever gone to a player and said, hey, man, tell me some sets that you like that you've ran. That will help, that I can put in here in a day that are simple. And at the time, we were kind of doing a little bit of some of the things, but he told me a couple things, and we actually put him in and helped him because, he didn't know what he was walking into that first game against LSU, and LSU was a ranked team, and nobody had any scout report on me. He went out and bombed those threes quickly, but he was in terrible shape. I mean, people don't realize. You could look back when he first got here. He wasn't in great shape in the way he's transformed his body. But, I would say a memory last year when, he knew he had to go out and take a look at what was out there for his professional career. And when he called me, and I was really hoping that he would come back. But I would never say that. I would say what I've always said, that, you got to go do what's right for you. You need to gather all the information. But when he told me he was – coming back, and he did it early. He didn't mess around. He found out what he needed to find out real quick. But with Josiah, totally different. We spent years recruiting Josiah. I can remember being in his home the night he committed, and you know, his family's got a beautiful family, and just being there with his family in his house, and then getting the you know, the call that, you know, his house had caught on fire. You know, somebody in the neighborhood, I think, had shot some fireworks off, and the roof of his house was smoldering and eventually caught on fire, and Joe pretty much lost all of his youthful memorabilia, things that he had. I remember being in that room, his bedroom, that night, seeing it. But, you know, so it's different because Santi was came in just selling, but Joe, we, is a typical person recruiting. But in him telling me from day one, you know, Joe was a McDonald's All-American, and a lot of people were talking about him being one and done. And I remember him telling me, "Coach, I'm not a one and done player. I don't want to be. I want to enjoy college. I want to be the best I can be. I want to work at it, and just where it takes me, it takes me." And so I could, again, like you said, there's so many things I could talk about either one of them, but Joe's booming laughter voice, you know, I hear it all the time I'll be in the film room or somewhere and I'll hear him in the locker room, just his voice, his laughter, certain laughs you hear that I can name three guys off the top of my head, players that I coached. If I were in a room crowded and I heard a laugh, I know exactly who it was. Joe has one of those laughs, and I love them both dearly, and I love them, again, the way you love a son, and I'd give them my heart. I really would, because I know they've given this university and this program everything they possibly could for the last 5 years.
Yeah, one of the things that stood out to me, one of my lasting memories, is just being down in Tampa in the SEC Tournament Championship and watching you and Josiah just hug, and you could tell the love and admiration that was there that stood out to me ever since then. I think that's my favorite memory of the last 5 years. Bob kind of laid it out in his intro, but Dalton Connect has been a joy to watch this year. He has his senior day tomorrow. At what point from him being on campus, whether it be in a visit or early season scrimmages or a game, at what point did you know you had something special with Dalton?
Well, I you know, they showed me the video of him. That's all I knew about him when he came in, and he came with his mom. And you know, when we're here, when we bring a person on a visit, honestly, we don't change anything. I'm who I am every day. I dress the same. I do the same. I don't do anything different. I cut up. But when I go on the court, I get serious. I mean, I'm serious about what I do, but I love to have fun with these people. And Dalton came in, and it was so easy to be around he and his mom and dad. And we talked. When we talked. I'd very transparent with him on the visit in terms of how I would go about doing things. And, you know, he loved KD's his favorite player and asked me stories. And I told him some of the good ones. I told him some of the tough ones that with KD. I mean, it wasn't all peachy cream with KD every time. I mean, he said the same thing to me that Dalton said. He said, "I want to be coached hard." And I said, "Well, I can do that for you." But Dalton, again, when I think about Dalton, he's so humble. I could tell you last night, without even being there, I can't tell you how many times I've walked out of that facility at 10:30, 10 o'clock, 10:45, and he's walking in and getting ready to get shots up. And I said, "Take care of your body." And he said, "Coach, I promise you I'll be in the cold tub tonight." And I know he does it. But the way that he is, humbled himself with our guys. But when he left here on the visit, I didn't think we would get him because I think he had already visited Oregon. I think he had a visit set up to go to Indiana. Then I think a week later, maybe North Carolina, maybe Kentucky was in the mention, but Mike Woodson, the coach at Indiana, had to delay the visit because I think he had to have a knee surgery or something like that. And Dalton decided, because he had a great weekend here with our spring football weekend and hit it off with our players. And again, that's why you get players recruit. When you bring a recruit in, your players are the ones that's going to finish the job, really. And he called and Rod told me Monday, he said, "Coach, I think we're going to get him." I said, "Well, we need him." And then he committed. And when he got here, you know, obviously you start hearing players talking about summer basketball when they're in their gym playing on their own, and he and Jemai going at it. But he didn't come, and I don't, and I I would tell you, none of us in our wildest imagination, including him, would think that he would come in and do what he's done this year and the way he's done it. And I guess when I guess the very first time when I knew that, hey, man, this guy's got something more than I even thought would have been the Michigan State game, because, one, I said it after the game, I was on him about his defense all sprint, all fall, and he showed it. If he wanted to do it, he could do it. And then, obviously, some of the shots he made, and then that dunk, I said, wow, I hadn't seen that up until the exhibition game. And I thought, man, when the lights come on, if he's going to take it to another level like this, we got a shot. And he's put together one of the great years in college basketball. And in terms of a guy that, you know, came in like this and has done what he's done with this program and this team.
We're joined with Coach Rick Barnes. Coach, moving on to some of the business at hand tomorrow. That game means a lot, obviously. It means a lot to Tennessee. We know it means a lot to Kentucky. Rivalry games always matter. But this one has even higher stakes. A win puts Tennessee, in our opinion, maybe an even stronger grip on a number one seed in the Big Dance. You know, we saw your sound bites from the locker room the other night at South Carolina, because we want to play on Monday, right? The Kentucky win would push them into the number two seed and a double bye in the SEC tournament. Of course, Kentucky certainly hasn't forgotten about that loss in Lexington earlier this season, so you know Cal's going to have them going. I would ask the question, how hard it is with all of this swirling around, senior day, all the things we've talked about, all the hype that's following this team now, to keep focus for one more regular season game. This has been a gauntlet that you guys have been running through, and there's no let up. You got to look ahead to what's down the road and could be the biggest prize of all. How do you guys approach that from a coaching perspective?
Well, we talked about it yesterday. Talked a lot about, we're always using the term mindset, and just what you're saying, we're not talking about senior day, the emotions that go with that. And our players, you know, they know what Santi and Joe and Dalton have meant to our team. And I mean, they want to see it be well, turn out well. But, one, you know, I've always believed if you take care of business, business takes care of itself. And, We have great respect for Kentucky, and we know that they're the without question the most explosive offensive basketball team in all of college basketball. And Cal, as you know, we have a friendship that goes back, you know, almost 50 years, and you're right, he'll have them ready. He always has them ready, and they can explode. They're a better team. They're a better team today than they were back when we played them, and I like to think we're better as well, but. And we're going to go out, and I think because of our older guys that, that we'll continue. We have a way we do things, and like today, our players know when we walk on the court. They know the system, what we expect, and how we expect to be focused. Actually, it started yesterday, and it's not today. You know, we started with our prep yesterday, and we expect them to, and talked about what you said about all the things swirling around it, people patting them on the back, saying this, saying that, and I can certainly give them examples through my time at as a head coach where I've had teams. My first team at Texas, we won the Big 12 regular season, just very similar with two games, and come home on senior night, and Missouri came in and beat us, and you have to go through a trophy presentation that you really like to, at that point, pick it up and throw it down, and you've lost the game. You know, there's so many examples through the years that I've seen it, but what you hope is, again, the maturity, the focus, and everything that we've done up to this point, because you certainly want to be moving in the right direction in everything that you're doing in terms of, your mental focus and physically. Guys still continuing to take care of their bodies. They were in there yesterday doing that. We had guys in there yesterday. Even though it's a day that we're trying to really get their bodies back right, and certainly certain guys need it because they've logged a lot of minutes. But it's hard to keep some of those guys out of the gym, but we just ask them to be smart And even though we talk a lot about the physical part, the mental part is more important. And that's where we've got to be focused and sharp. And so we'll have practice today. We'll have dinner tonight. We'll have a come back and do our another meeting tonight after dinner. We'll get up tomorrow and do our pregame, everything that we do, shoot around. And I expect our guys to be locked in and focused like they've had up to this point, and I'll be disappointed if they're not.
Coach, having played in these big rivalry games versus Kentucky and others for 5 years now, what is kind of a specific part of Josiah and Santi's preparation leading up to these type of games that you kind of tell younger kids on your roster to try and emulate in that process leading up to the game?
Well, they're different. Santi's the kind of guy that when practice is over with, he's going to stay and shoot a lot. I mean, he's going to do his thing either before or after practice. That's how he likes to go about doing it. And Josiah is one that he's the kind of guy tonight after we go through our meeting, we'll finish up probably 9 o'clock, 9:30, something, wherever, maybe earlier. It depends on what comes through my mind between now and then that I want to get across to him after the coaches. And our coaches do an incredible job with the game prep in terms of scouting and all that. But Joe will probably walk back out there. Dalton, a couple guys will go out and shoot. I'll be surprised when I walk in today if Joe's not out there shooting or doing something. So every guy has his own way of doing things. And some guys just have to be out there. They got to have a ball in their hand, dribbling, doing something. Joe's one of those guys. Both of them, as you know, are high-level competitors. But you want guys to, again, each and every guy. When I played, same thing happened, guys. I had different ways to go about getting themselves ready. I can tell both of those guys they're great. They'll both be extremely locked in tonight when we go into the film room along with Jemima and Zakai. Those four guys are the ones that will be asking questions and making sure that oftentimes their questions will be asked. They know the answer. They're just making sure that other guys are on the same page. When they ask questions, most of the time, I think they know the answer, but they want to make sure it's an emphasis and the other guys on the team realize how important that answer is.
Coach, we saw the video. It fired us up. It fired the entire fan base up. Monday Night Vols, that's the goal. What would it mean to you to get this team to the finish line in Arizona?
Well, that's why we do it. That's why we do it. And you know what? I think it's something that you've got to work at. You got to keep it prevalent there in your mind when you go out there, when you're in the grind the way we are. I've been blessed. God has blessed me with so many wonderful players, people in the past. And I've mentioned before, I've had a couple teams. Grant asked me that the other night. He was there at the game, and he asked me, he said, how many teams do you think you've coached that you really thought had a legitimate chance? And I said, probably three. One of them got there, two of them, maybe four that, that we had two that I think lost in the Elite Eight that we thought that if we could get there. You get there, you got to certainly know you got a chance to get there. But I want it. Yeah, if that's what we do, that's why we play the game, and that's why we try to get there. But I don't. I want us, when it's all said and done, I just want us to be able to hold our heads high, knowing that we gave it everything we had. We made the run to get there. We did everything we could from start to finish, and I don't want to have any regrets. And I think we have regrets is when some of the things that Bob alluded to about you start letting outside things factor into it, where you lose focus for just a little bit, and that might be your preparation going, getting ready for the game. You've got to be able to handle it. Because of that, I used to not let people come around, people in the locker room, people wanting to put booms in the in the huddle, all those type things. But I've changed through the years where I'm like, okay, whatever we can do to assimilate all the hoopla that's going to be around the NCAA tournament, where TVs, more people, interviews, da da da. I said, let's let's get that in more than anything. I'm even thinking that we're going to have to talk about next week things like you got 27 minutes on the court compared to we got a long time out there. You know, we got 55 or whatever whenever we go out with our what we have organized right now. So we need to start getting in our mind we're only going to have maybe 27 minutes on the court. So everything we've done all year is going to change, but it changes for everybody. And just those little things as a coach, you get going in your mind because you just don't want the players to lose rhythm and do what they do to stay focused, because every game you go in and know that if both teams play well, it's a possession game, one, two possession game. But to get us to with this team to get there, it would be obviously a, you know, something that I think is special, obviously, and maybe a dream come true. I mean, I've had a chance to coach in a Final Four, and would I love it for every team I've ever coached to get a chance to be there? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's something that these guys are already bonded forever, because when you win a championship, they'll be celebrated 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 25 years from now. And so this group will always have a connection that, again, when you get labeled a champion, they, you know, people like to bring those teams back. But right now, though, it's Kentucky, and it's Kentucky, and we got to get ready for them, and we know we're going to get their best shot, and hope we're ready to give them our best shot.
Coach, you've been so generous with our time. The last thing I'll say as we go out the door was watching that little scene with Santi drawing up the play at Alabama last weekend. I don't think I could love this team more. Watching you watch him, all of that stuff. We're all going to be at the game tomorrow, cheering you on, screaming. We'll be with you all month too. Thank you so much for the time, and wish you the best tomorrow and throughout March too.
I appreciate Bob, and I tell you what happened there. Santi and I, we were looking at each other and we were talking about what we wanted to run. And we knew we wanted to end up with the ball back in Sakai's hands at the end of the set. We wanted to try to get Tobey, and so we have a play call, and it's called New York, because you know it's really going to end up back with Sakai. I said make sure we look at the first option, and Santi knows everything we're doing. He looked at Tobey, said, "Tobey, you know what that means." And Tobey looked at him like a little bit not so. Santi, I thought it was great. He looked in his eyes. I looked in his eyes like, hey. And so Santi grabbed the boy and said, look, you get right here and you don't move. You stand right. And he actually put the exact spot on the floor where we always talk about it. Most of the time our post guys leave early and it takes away space. But Santi said, you get right here and don't you move until I come across the lane and give you more room to operate. And I loved it because Santi read his eyes perfectly and knew that he was, you know, just want, you know, it just gave Tobey gave off the impression he wasn't quite sure, but he thought. And so, again, that goes back to Santi and Josiah. Those guys, they know their teammates as well as coaches do, and that. And I loved it. I love it when our players are that locked in.
Yeah, I love that. Thanks for sharing all that. That's great, Coach. Go get them tomorrow, man. We'll be there cheering for you. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. God
yes,
bless.
Sir.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a great day. I ran out of time. I was going to ask him who he had at the WrestleMania main event, but maybe Eli will give us an answer. Coming up next, appreciate Coach Barnes for all of his time. Some great insight. You know, I maybe jinxed myself, Sam. I said I don't get emotional about, you know, the players leaving and everything, and mm-hmm. I got to be honest. The first couple answers from Coach Barnes there talking about how much Santi and Joe mean to him, I felt a little something. I don't know if it was a tear, but the hair on my arms raised a little bit. My eyes did get a little misty.
You weren't alone, man. You weren't alone. That was something.
I do still think about that hug that him and Joe shared in Tampa after winning that SEC championship, and it meant a lot. And I kept coming back to that, you know, during Josiah's struggles as well, you know, as he was kind of struggling last year and at times this year, and just thinking about the relationship those two have and how much it means to both of them. I'm so happy that they are both, and Santi and Dalton and the whole team is getting to enjoy this season and winning a championship, at least having something that will have you remembered and celebrated, you know, in future Tennessee basketball historic moments. They have a chance to add to that, and that's pretty exciting too. We'll switch gears. We'll do a little weekend betaway with Eli Hershkovich. We'll talk some conference tournaments in the weekend that's coming up. Stick with us. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio.